Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Last month, the president went to San Diego to check out how his border wall was coming along.
And you'll see it's a combination of steel, concrete, and as one of the folks just said, it really is virtually impenetrable.
He stood in front of stacks of metal poles and talked about the cement and rebar that made the slats for his wall impossible to cut through. He talked about the special heat-absorbing design that made the wall sizzling to the touch. Trump said the government had even hired mountain climbers to test the wall out.
And some of them were champions, and we gave them different prototypes of walls. And this was the one that was hardest to climb, and we've all seen the pictures of young people climbing.
This week, we learned the president had other ideas for how to beef up security along the U.S.-Mexico border. He reportedly suggested building a moat along one side of the wall, filling it with snakes and alligators. He suggested opening fire on migrants, shooting them in the legs.
At one point, he also mused about arming U.S. forces with bayonets.
Nick Miroff reports on Homeland Security for The Washington Post.
He thought that you could have a kind of a human wall, like in you know, if he couldn't get a wall built in time, he would deploy a human wall of soldiers or U.S., you know, Border Patrol agents who would wield bayonets to keep the migrants back.
Presidential aides didn't take many of these ideas very seriously.
And these are the real people. These are the workers that put up the wall, by the way. All of these guys.
But at the border last month, Nick says you could see how what started out as a presidential brainstorm was becoming reality. And that's partially because of someone else in the Trump administration, the acting director of Homeland Security, Kevin McAleenan. At the border, he was standing right behind the president the whole time.
So he's one of the most enigmatic and complicated figures I've encountered covering this.
McAleenan stayed mostly silent as the president showed off his high-tech border, which is strange because this wall is as much his as it is the president's.
He is both an enabling force in that he's made the Trump administration's immigration policies more effective. But he's also a moderating force in that he has taken the harder edge off a lot of these things and stood in the way of the administration doing things that he couldn't abide or that would potentially be even more controversial, you know.
Today on the show, after this visit to the border, acting DHS Secretary Kevin McAleenan broke his silence. In the middle of partisan warfare in Washington, he told Nick Miroff he's trying to stake out middle ground. But is that even possible anymore? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick with us.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Kevin McAleenan has only been on the job for a few months. He took over as the acting head of the Department of Homeland Security this spring. That's when Kirstjen Nielsen was forced out. He inherited what was then a full-on crisis at the border. Nick Miroff says he wanted to talk to McAleenan because he seemed different than the other members of Trump's cabinet. Organized, sincere, and he was an insider. He'd worked in both Democrat and Republican administrations.
He doesn't talk like the president's other immigration enforcement officials. He avoids using, more politicized language. He doesn't say illegal aliens. He refers to migrants as vulnerable families who are being kind of victimized by smuggling organizations. He doesn't, unlike other officials in the administration, play up the criminality of migrants or depict them as a major national security threat. So while he's been very effective at implementing many of the president's policies and has played this central role in kind of bringing the crisis at the border under control, he still kind of stands apart from others in the administration because he's a career official who tries to, still cling to this idea that you can be a neutral law enforcement professional in the middle of this administration that has politicized immigration enforcement almost, to a degree we've never seen before.
Yeah, I mean, you found that he was a really complicated guy. Like, he demurred when you asked about his political standing right now, but he did donate to President Obama and he was part of that administration.
He had President Obama as a professor in law school at the University of Chicago before, he joined the federal government. And so this is a guy who, when he was brought in as acting secretary, even before that at CBP, hardliners were telling the president this, you can't really trust this guy. He's a Democrat. He's an Obama guy. And the president has even teased him about that.
When Kevin McAleenan spoke to Nick, he was remarkably frank. He talked about being increasingly isolated in the Trump administration, of feeling like he doesn't have firm control over the messaging in his own department. But Nick says the funny thing is that McAleenan also seems like one of the president's most effective cabinet members.
The irony of it is that he has delivered on the one thing that has mattered most to the president, which is to drive down the border number. So, CBP and the Border Patrol were, in fact, overwhelmed by this huge influx of Central American families who needed much more care. And, and these agents were basically had an infrastructure that had been designed for, single adult males from Mexico who could be quickly processed and deported. But now, they're facing all of these families who are coming and turning themselves in, who need much more care, who have much more complicated, legal claims. And the system is basically on the verge of collapse. And since then, the situation has really turned around. And the White House, is crediting McAleenan in a lot of ways and saying that, he's done a great job and DHS has never been better run. But he very much remains this kind of outsider who doesn't talk like everybody else in the administration and is clearly frustrated with the way that he's been unable to really control the kind of messaging on immigration enforcement. And it's also important to point out that after, he's been in this acting role for 6 months without a nomination, no president has ever left the head of DHS in an acting role for this long. That's always been a priority for different administrations, is to have a Senate-confirmed secretary at the head of DHS in order to really reassure Americans that, that this crucial security agency protecting the United States from, attack and so forth is run by someone who's this very clear authority figure.
McAleenan has been an authority figure in Washington for years. Before taking over the Department of Homeland Security, he ran Customs and Border Patrol. While doing that job, he pushed for the Trump administration's controversial family separation policy last year.
So here's a guy who played a crucial role in the zero tolerance family separations that we'll all recall from last year. Elijah Cummings, during an oversight hearing earlier this year, called McAleenan a key architect of family separations.
I guess you feel like you're doing a great job, right? Is that what you're saying?
We're doing our level best in a very challenging.
What does that mean? What does that mean when a child is sitting in their own feces, can't take a shower? Come on, man. What's that about? None of us would have our children in that position. They are human beings.
And it wasn't just that. I remember that Elijah Cummings testimony because he was so emotional and he really lit into McAleenan. And he said, these are babies. These are babies in diapers who you're separating.
We are the greatest country in the world. We are the ones that can go anywhere in the world and save people. Make sure that they have diapers.
Make sure that they have toothbrushes. A stunning moment.
Right. But to me, the irony is that McLennan is the one figure in the administration who has been the most publicly repentant and remorseful about his role in the whole affair, and who has gone way farther than anyone else in the Trump administration in acknowledging that this was a mistake. And, you know, when he took that acting secretary job, he told the White House that he would resign if he was asked to implement another family separation policy. So here's this guy that plays a central role in implementing the policy, but then regrets it deeply and doesn't want to do it again and remains in some ways kind of haunted by it.
It's interesting. I was talking to someone about this story and talking about how with the acting DHS Secretary McLennan, when I talk about him, there's a lot of on the one hand and on the other hand, because he's done things that seem contradictory, especially in this administration. So he's, yes, implementing Trump policies that advocates see as really onerous. But then at the same time, you wrote about how he stepped in and steered the administration away from controversial raids on families earlier this year. Do you want to tell that story?
Soon after he's in the acting secretary role, there's a new ICE director. At that point, that was Mark Morgan, who comes in, and this is right after that purge at DHS, and the White House was really pushing for ICE to go forward with what was called the family operation, and that was a long-planned mass roundup of Central American families that had come across the border, filed for some kind of, you know, asylum or other form of protection, and not appeared for their court dates. So these were about 2,500 families that hadn't appeared for their hearings and were now eligible for deportation. And the Trump administration very much wanted to go out and round them up. And McLennan at the time was managing this crisis at the border and going up to the Hill and pleading with Democrats for emergency supplemental funding to improve the kind of conditions for children and families that were languishing in these border stations. And he was saying, look, you know, this is a, you know, humanitarian need. We've had children die in custody. We can't let it happen again. And he told me that he was devastated after the deaths of Jacqueline Call McKean and Felipe Alonso Gomez, the two Guatemalan children who died in December. He called those deaths a lightning bolt, and that really solidified the urgency of going to Democrats and trying to get this money and to try to overhaul the whole system along the border for detention and processing that he, you know, rightly points out is completely inadequate for dealing with children and families. And so at the same time he was trying to do that, you know, the White House is pushing to go stage this mass roundup of families that was potentially going to separate parents from children again and inflame the Democrats. And so he went to bat against this family operation and managed to convince the president to hold off, but he was nearly fired over it. And as we all know what happens next, the vote, the $4.6 billion supplemental bill passes and ends up actually dividing the Democrats, turning, you know, the Progressive Caucus, for example, against Nancy Pelosi. But that money ends up making a significant difference in improving conditions at the border. And despite all that, McLennan was very much, you know, blamed by hardliners for kind of attempting to undercut this thing that they thought was going to have a big deterrent impact, and eventually, you know, has gone forward, but not in the kind of noisy and spectacular way that I think some in the White House wanted it to go off.
I wonder if you look at that incident and you see it as kind of his original sin, like, has he ever really recovered from it with the White House?
I think he's recovered with the White House, but not with the hardliners who orbit the president, who've continued to agitate for his removal and have, you know, continued to encourage Trump to put someone, quote unquote, tougher in that role, who will talk like the president and be a more forceful messenger, particularly on television. McLennan doesn't especially like to go on television. And when you see him, he still speaks in a very kind of, formal and neutral way that doesn't sound like, for example, Ken Cuccinelli, and certainly not like the president. And so, as the president moves into re-election and campaign mode, I think there's this pressure to have somebody in the top DHS role who's going to be out there, delivering, the kind of hard-hitting rhetoric that you see from a figure like former ICE Director Tom Homan, who we've seen in recent months, really have these intense clashes with Democrats and in hearings on the Hill. Somebody like that who's going to be a real immigration firebrand. And McLennan just isn't that guy. He's, again, trying to sort of walk this very lonely, neutral path in navigating, immigration politics in the Trump era.
Well, you've said a couple of times that McLennan has been successful and that President Trump acknowledges it and other people acknowledge it. I'm wondering what you mean by that.
He would say that some of the harsher and measures that you describe as more onerous are justified in the face of this huge, uncontrolled influx of people coming across the border this year. But, I will also point out that, his success at driving down these numbers has come, for immigrant advocates and attorneys and rights groups, a lot of them are point to the policies that have achieved those, that decline, as really, abuses or policies that are inconsistent with, U.S. humanitarian programs and law. Some of these more extreme things that have been done, he defends as being necessary to get the situation under control, to prevent things from turning worse. And what he sees as something as a phenomenon that is very much driven by criminal organizations and smugglers who are preying on migrant families and who are taking advantage of them and who are putting children at grave risk and are doing things that are just not acceptable. I mean, he's a cop. He's a career law enforcement official. And when you see a situation like this that there's law breaking on a mass scale, I think that your natural response is to try to try to bring it under control. And so some of the things that he's advocated very much reflect that.
I wonder. I read your reporting and I just wondered, why do you think McLennan spoke to you? Because he was pretty honest. He talked about how he'd lost control over the tone and message of his department. And that's a pretty big admission. It made me wonder why he was speaking to you at all. Do you think there's a chance that he kind of sees the writing on the wall? Like, I've been here a long time and I still haven't been, up in front of Congress getting formally approved, and maybe I need to make sure my reputation looks a little better before I get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that, if you look at the things he's done over the last couple weeks, he gave this major counterterrorism speech that was sponsored by Brookings and Heritage in this kind of conspicuous showing of bipartisanship. And he went way farther than anyone in the administration in naming white nationalism and domestic terror as a major emerging national security threat. That was sort of a surprise. And then at the same time last month, he also conspicuously reversed this attempt by Cuccinelli at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services to be able to deport migrants who had this thing called medical deferred action, which was basically like if you have some kind of medical condition that would potentially endanger your life if you were deported, then you were allowed to stay. The Cuccinelli wanted to end that program, and McLennan kind of came in and reversed that. And so it was this example of someone in the Trump administration actually doing something to favor, immigrants who are living in the country illegally. That was also noticeable. And so I see him doing these things that are kind of more consistent with his values and his, again, kind of more centrist view of immigration enforcement. And yeah, it has me wondering, what what's next for him. And I think, you know, we could easily see where the president again would want to move into, you know, into more of a campaign mode where you have somebody in the DHS top role who would be, you know, out there more forcefully and aggressively advocating for his, you know, kind of more hardline positions.
That's really interesting. Especially, I'd seen the white nationalism thing at the same time that your article had come out, and it really did seem to me like this guy stepping out and saying, like, I'm going to do this now. I have this authority, and so I'm going to move forward and just, like, let's see what happens.
Yeah, in some ways, it's a test. Like, how independent can a cabinet official, a major, agency head in the Trump era, how independent can they be of the White House and the president and set their own path? And I think he's kind of testing that right now.
How long do you think he can get away with this?
You know, the Trump administration has tried all these other figures, and he's the one who's been able to deliver. So the president right now, looks to the border as a bright spot in his administration. He can once more run on his border record. He can actually go out there and say, I faced this crisis and I got it under control, and the Democrats didn't help me. And I did this, and McElhinney is the guy that really, helped make that happen. So I don't know. I don't know how much latitude that buys him to continue doing this, but certainly some.
Nick Miroff, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Nick Miroff covers the Department of Homeland Security for The Washington Post. All right, that is the show. What Next is produced by Mary Wilson, Jason DeLeon, Mara Silvers, and Danielle Hewitt. And I'm Mary Harris. I will catch you on Monday.
I'm Dahlia Lithwick, and I'm host of Amicus, Slate's podcast about the law and the U.S. Supreme Court. We are shifting into high gear, coming at you weekly with the context you need to understand the rapidly changing legal landscape. The many trials of Donald J. Trump, judicial ethics, arguments and opinions at SCOTUS. We are tackling the big legal news with clarity and insight every single week. New Amicus episodes every Saturday, wherever you listen.